Okay, we're awake.
I will call to order the Natural Resource Subcommittee meeting of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, and we're meeting today to finish out the public hearing process for the Marine Board budget and possibly go into work session. It's not my intention to pass the budget out today. It's my intention to make sure that everyone has all the information that they need so that we can pass the budget out in a very short meeting tomorrow. And with that, Susie Jordan is first on the agenda, and you want to introduce some things that you brought to the committee today?
Right. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. The first thing I'm going to share with you is you had asked about the priorities for the Marine Board budget between enforcement and facilities. And so what I brought for you is the language from the statute, just the excerpts that relate to the priorities. And I highlighted for you on the last two pages the portions of the statute that refer to how the Marine Board will spend the monies that are put into the safety enforcement and facility account. And they first start out by directing the Marine Board to put, after their necessary administrative expenses, to put the money that they need into law enforcement, and then following that, any amounts remaining would go into facilities. So that's why the Marine Board priority is for enforcement, and that's why they would take money from the facility area to pay for any increased costs that they would have for enforcement. So that's just for your information. And then secondly, there's a spreadsheet there that gives you the history for the Marine Board from as far back as I could find documentation. In the Legislative Fiscal Office, 77 through 2103, and this was to give you a perspective on how costs have split among the three program areas, and in particular the law enforcement piece. The front page are the revenues and expenditures, and then a percentage of the programs by of the total budget, and then a breakdown of the law enforcement contracts between the county sheriffs and the state police by a percent of the law enforcement contracts portion of it. And then on the back, I put a graph that displays it visually for you, so because some people are more visually oriented than numbers oriented. And I mentioned to those that were here before the hearing started that the on the revenue box, the last three columns, the total revenue does not add the beginning balance, and so those numbers are off by the beginning balance amount. So,
does everybody have the revised numbers?
I'll read them off. For $97.99, the total is $27,101,567.
Are you on here?
Yes. Top of the revenue, $97.99 column. The total is $27,101,567. For $99.01 estimated, it's $28,016,195. And for 0103 proposed, it's $27,719,343.
So, Susie, when I'm looking at the revenue numbers for the agency, it we're starting out with some pretty low numbers here, but in 87, 89, they jump way up. They go from just under $6 million to over $12 million. What happened in there to cause that jump?
In the 1985-87 biennium, the legislation was passed to calculate on a formula that is determined by the Department of Transportation and the Marine Board how much marine fuel or how much of the highway fuel tax money is collected because the gas is being used in motorboats, And in 85, 87, the 1.3 million is probably a partial year's calculation. And then in 87, 89 is probably a full biennium's worth. And then as the gas tax tax rate increased, so did the profits to the Marine Board increase. And the last increase for highway fuel tax was in 1991, I believe. It could have been 1995. So you see that they had an increase, and then it's been pretty stable since then. And as the number of boats on the water increased, so did the amount of money that was coming from fuel tax increase.
Representative Hayden.
There was a 6 cent increase in 91, which was phased in at 2 cents a year.
And so when I'm looking at the proposed 2001 to 2003 budget, and I'm comparing it to the 1901 estimated budget, I see that there is the beginning balance is less, but all of the other numbers are higher than the preceding biennium. So the shortfall, is it correct to say that the beginning balance is causing a problem here?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, there's a couple things that are going on here. One is federal revenues, while there is they're showing a slight increase, costs have increased beyond the amount of money that they're getting. So their federal revenues are down. They're projecting the fuel tax rate at 11.3 million, but they're expecting a lower rate money. The amount of money that's in the beginning balance is I want to say it's not real money, but it's an
funny
accounting.
Money.
Yeah, it's funny money. Part of that is the fuel tax payment that they get on a quarterly basis, so it's there, but it's gone right away. And so the amount of beginning cash balance is much lower than the number that's actually reflected here.
Okay.
So yes, in answer to your question, that's part of the problem.
So part of the problem is I guess my question would be, is it fair to characterize the shortfall that the agency is finding itself in a flattening of revenues and a lower beginning balance?
Yes.
Nope, okay. The other thing that I was interested in, I'm sorry.
I don't believe I understand clearly the beginning balance concept again. Can you go through that again quickly?
I'm going to let Paul come up and explain to you how they calculate that.
And also how the estimates are arrived at for the funds, the gas tax.
The fuel tax.
Would Paul be the correct person on that one too?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Paul Don Hefner, Director of the Marine Board. Madam Chair and Representative Hayden, the beginning balance appears to be significantly high in all cases since the advent of fuel tax collections back in 85, and it's because of an accounting scenario in which the funds are accrued and are an obligation to the Marine Board, but they're not actually transferred until July 15th of the following year, and it's based on collections in the prior 12 months. So it's an obligation to the board. It shows up through accounting as revenue for the Marine Board, but the money doesn't actually flow to us until after the fiscal year. So it's counted as beginning balance. It's not in the bank to be used or actual program expenditures until after July 15th. So it distorts the picture, if you will, because it looks like we've got an extra $5-7 million sitting there that in fact we don't, because it doesn't come in until the next year, but it is an obligation to the board. Does that answer that? The estimating of fuel tax up until a few years ago was done using the U.S. Treasury method, which was calculated by the United States Treasury for estimating federal motorboat fuel taxes. We use the same methodology for a number of years, and it's based on a composite figure of a number of gallons in different size classes of boats. A couple of years ago, we changed that, working with the Oregon Department of Transportation, and now we're going back to basing it on the Oregon survey that we do every 3 years, and we'll be doing that in cooperation with the Department of Administrative Services, who will administer the survey through an independent third-party, probably Oregon State University Survey Center. They'll actually do the survey, and then they calculate fuel usage in boats in different length categories. We apply the number of boats in that length category to arrive at a consumption figure, and then apply the tax rate to that.
Madam Chair, so a survey is done. You have the names of boat owners. Those are licensed. You phone them up and say, how much did you use your boat last year?
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, yes, the Survey Center asked people this question in several different ways, but essentially, yes, they how many days did you use your boat? How much fuel do you use on a typical day? And then they'll ask it the other way and compare the two. But the results over time have been remarkably consistent, and Oregon's consumption factors are very consistent with those of other states, such as Washington.
Senator Dukes.
This question isn't my fault, it's Representative Hayden's fault. He got me thinking about it yesterday. Are your watercraft, your boats, considered motor vehicles?
Madam Chair, Senator Duke, no, they're not considered motor vehicles. They're considered boats or watercraft. They're defined in Chapter 830, which is boating and small watercraft. They don't come under the DMV definitions of motor vehicle. So a boat is boat or watercraft, and different than a motor vehicle.
Okay.
So, for example, driving while intoxicated, there is a highway statute on that for people driving vehicles or motor vehicles. We have a parallel statute dealing with people operating a boat while intoxicated.
Okay,
they're
thank you.
Parallel but separate.
I have, I'm still looking on the spreadsheet that you prepared for us, and I'm looking at the second from the bottom category breakdown of law enforcement contracts, and then the bottom one, percent of total law enforcement. Mm-hmm. And what I see is, on percent of total law enforcement, in the big jump for the Oregon State Police appears to be from the 97-99 biennium to the 99-01 biennium, where there was almost an 11% increase in the funding. And then in the proposed biennium, we are actually just, I mean, it appears that we're only 3-point-something%, which is about the increase that the previous ones have been. Is that a fair statement to make?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, there's two things going on here. The big increase between 97-99, as was presented yesterday in testimony, is the increase for state police services that were probably being done but not very well documented, that the last legislature acknowledged and put into the 99-01 budget. In the proposed budget, there had been the Marine Board had proposed an inflation factor, and then on top of that, the governor said that we need another 400,000, so it's a 3.5% rather than was it 2.5% that they had originally put in the budget for increasing. So it's a.
Madam Chair, 3.5% of what?
Representative Nolan.
Madam Chair, 3.5% of what?
Of the 99-01 estimated actual expenditures.
The increase
what you're
in
seeing
this. I'm sorry, Madam Chair. What's the base on which you're increasing 3.5%?
950,000. approximately. And, Madam Chair, if I might, to go from 950,000 to 1.3 million is more than 3.5%. That's a 50%
Madam Chair,
increase.
I'm sorry. What is happening here, this is percent of the total law enforcement budget. It's not a percent increase. These are percentages of total law enforcement. So your increase is higher than that one budget to the next. But of the total law enforcement amount of money, it's 13.5%. I wasn't doing inflationary increases. I was just showing the percent of total budget. So you could see a comparison between how much the county sheriffs are providing in services versus how much the state police are providing in total services.
Madam Chair, Susan, where's the rest of it coming from?
The rest of?
75, 85, the other 15%.
It's all coming from Marine Board revenues. Your question?
No, my question is who's providing it if county sheriffs provide 75% and am I reading this right? County sheriffs provide 75 and
they get 70.
Are we OSP looking at our Susie,
are my budgets, my numbers are off is what you're
okay.
saying, yeah.
Are we starting with the assumption, I think, representative of 100%, and then we're breaking out of that how much is county, how much is state?
I see. My formulas are wrong.
Madam Chair,
Gary
Madam
went over
Chair,
this
if
before.
I
might. Let's be careful.
Yes. Let me see here. I can do this better.
Madam Chair, does the department itself provide any law enforcement, and is that part of it?
No.
I think we just have a computational error, which is swiftly being dealt with.
It's a beautiful spreadsheet.
It looks good, doesn't it? So this is so the percentage on the police here in 0103 is 15.74%, and the county then is
84 something.
Is 84.26, and what my spreadsheet is doing is it's dividing by the county sheriffs, so the state police by sheriff. So don't look at those percentages.
Whereas it should be dividing by the
Total of the two
law enforcement number right here.
No, the total of these two combined of 7,341,082 plus 1,371,950. Is 8,712,032. That's the total amount of money that's going to law enforcement by counties, sheriffs, and state police.
Then why doesn't that number match up to this one?
Because there are administrative costs within the 10 million number that the Marine Board has for managing these contracts.
How much? How much money?
They're budgeted at 10 million.
And this comes to about 8.6. So
that's
1.4.
To actually manage?
Yes.
1.4 million to manage how many contracts?
Yeah. How many contracts?
Madam Chair, Representative Crump, the difference between the contract amounts for state police and counties and the total represents our cost of delivering that program, which includes our training, includes capital outlay for boats and equipment. It includes four FTE that work as program managers, trainers, and work in other aspects of our law enforcement program, tracking things like citations, DUI arrests, stolen boats, voting accident investigation, and other types of things. That accounts for the difference. I was going to say, Susie, it may be that you were running those contract numbers off of the total, and that would probably be about right.
That's probably.
Representative Krupp, did you have a follow-up?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. So how many contracts, Paul?
Oh, excuse me.
Oh, that is what I did.
32 counties, okay. plus the state police.
Okay, thank you.
The counties that are not in the program are some of the drier ones like Lake, Wheeler, Grant.
Right.
Did do, thank you. So these percentages down here are the total law enforcement budget altogether. So the rest of it is in administration.
Okay.
Madam Chair, is it possible for us to get a new printout before we're done today so that we all have accurate information?
Sure. Depends on how you want to show the percentage. What I did was I'm showing the percentage of the total law enforcement budget, which includes administration. And what I don't have is an administration line down at the bottom.
Yes,
so I could put the administration line there so you could see the total. Or I can put a percent of just between the county sheriffs and the state police.
Be helpful to put the administrative line.
I would be interested in seeing the administrative line put in there, too.
But again, Madam Chair, to expand upon what Paul was just in his answer to my question, is that administrative costs actually includes
services and supplies.
Services, supplies, capital outlay for replacement of boats, correct, which we talked about earlier.
Which are provided to the county sheriffs, you mean.
Okay.
And training.
Yeah.
And isn't that what the facility grants are used for?
Madam Chair, Representative Bowman, no. Facility grants are used for public access, construction projects, and the like, not for capital improvements with or capital acquisitions within the law enforcement program. Law enforcement has its own capital outlay.
Percentage of this number.
Yeah, that would be helpful to have
for
a line.
Replacement boats and equipment.
So then, Madam Chair, it would facilities grants would go to things like boat docks, boat ramps, things of that nature would have to do with that.
Correct.
I just want to make sure that we're all on the same page with the tweaking of this spreadsheet. Is everyone in agreement that we would ask Susie to add a line under in the percent of total law enforcement section at the bottom that is administration, or we could call it something else because it really is more than administration, and give us the percentages of the total marine law enforcement budget that's shown under expenditure history.
Okay. Madam Chair, so that if we ever have to come back to it and it's not fresh in our memories, I'd suggest we add that it is administration, education, and support services so that we don't think that it's a fat administrative budget.
I was going to say 14% is what that would be.
Yeah.
It'd be pretty strong.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that's a good idea. Madam Representative Krieger.
We don't really know then how much is being spent on education, how much actual administration of the programs.
Right.
That would be interesting to see how that's changed.
Well, there apparently was some problems breaking those numbers out because I had requested that education and administration be separated under the expenditure history. And Susie said that she couldn't pull the numbers apart.
Madam Chair, that's correct. The Marine Board has about one FTE devoted to education activities, plus some publication of brochures and maybe some attendance at some events. Up until the 9901 biennium, where they started phasing in the mandatory education program, and there is a package in the 2103 budget to finalize the administration of the mandatory education phase, and so those costs would be associated with mandatory or education too. But other than that,
Madam Chair, I guess it would be helpful for me if I could clearly understand what the expectation is from the additional revenue and law enforcement, because I guess I still hear that part of it is for, like the part that's for the Oregon State Police that's being increased, when we had the explanation, I was told that there was a certain percentage based on what happened in the 9901 biennium, and then there was 400,000 added to that. But I'm not clear what the expectation was of what was going to happen with that 400,000. And so I'm just not clear where that fits into this whole overall scheme.
This would probably be a good thing to have Captain Ball and Lieutenant Cock come forward.
Well, excuse me, Madam Chair. I understand the explanation of what the state police, like what happens on the ground with the 10% of time. That piece I understand, but the part that I'm having trouble with is. The explanation that we received said that there was this additional $400,000 that I'm not clear on, like we just added another $400,000, but we didn't add any expectation on what was going to happen with that $400,000.
Madam Chair, Representative Bowman, in developing the budget for the state police fishing game, because we had added, the legislature had added positions in the last biennium and they were phased in, not all of the positions were funded for a full biennium. This created a hole in the state police budget. The governor put together their budget. They looked at ways to fund that. The state police had asked for general fund. The governor said, we don't have general fund. How, where else can we get the money to fund these positions, the roll-up costs of these positions, and they chose to use an increase in the contract from the Marine Board. Now the expectation is that the state police will provide the additional hours that they are they are getting paid for on the ground in the field for this additional money. So they will be providing 11,000 more hours of service and documenting that for payment of Marine Board resources. So there is an expectation that there will be an increase in services. There is not, however, necessarily a need from the Marine Board's perspective for additional services. Okay, that helps.
Representative Crump.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Susie, I want to go back to a comment you just made so I make sure that I understand it correctly. You talked about there was an increase in contracts. Are you talking about an increase in the amount that's charged for the contracts, or what are we referring to?
Madam Chair, Representative Croft, what I was referring to is the way the Marine Board pays for services from both the county sheriff and the state police is on a per-hour basis. And okay. In order to provide an increased amount of funding, they have to increase the number of hours at a base rate for state police services.
And what do we pay per hour?
For state police, I believe it's $32 or $35 an hour. $35. Thank you.
Okay. No more questions on the spreadsheet or the statutory stuff. Linda Gilbert, did you have anything to add to your presentation from yesterday? Paul, did you have anything that you wanted to add, any additional questions to cover?
Madam Chair, there was one question that I was left with at the end of the day regarding our facility program that I believe Representative Bauman asked, and it was in regard to what is the priority for the facility grant dollars, and if we're oversubscribed in that, how do we deal with it? What do we provide? Just to give you a snapshot of that, looking back, 97-99, we had $5.1 million available for discretionary grants. This is after the maintenance assistance program and engineering and the rest. We had $5.1 million other funds and federal funds available for grants. During our first round, which is our big funding round that we do in July to kick off the biennium and get projects out the door, we made available $2.8 million. We received 60 applications. Those applications requested $8.4 million. So we had $2.8 million available. We got requests for $8.4 million. We were able to approve 30 set aside 7 later funding, defer another 12, give what we call conceptual approval to 8, which means it's a good idea, but it's not ready to be funded. 2 were denied and one was withdrawn. Moving forward to the current biennium, we had $4.3 million available. Our first round was $2.1 million, and we had 72 applications totaling $8.3 million. So 8.4 in the prior biennium, 8.3 requested in round one this time. Of the 72, 46 were approved, 19 were deferred, 5 were given conceptual approval, and 2 were denied. What we try to do in prioritizing these is to look at those projects that represent critical rehabilitation and replacement type of projects. There are very few new starts taking place in Oregon. This has been true for the last several years. New starts are few and far between. Most of the work, the overwhelming majority of the work, is rehabilitation and replacement of existing facilities. Much like the highway programs, a lot of it's just going into rehab and keeping things going. So that's really the highest priority that we have is taking care of the existing infrastructure.
Thank you.
I didn't have anything else, ma'am.
Further questions or comments, Representative Krieger.
Sharon Morgan. On the facility grant line in the second set of blocks, you go clear across the right, it's 715707. Where did that number come up yesterday when the sheriff was here when he's talking about the 1.3 million and there was this lack of money was being left in the facility grants? That's what they were complaining about. The OSP money was coming out of the facility grants money. It wasn't coming out of enforcement. But yet we still got this 7.115 million. Something doesn't, either I missed something or yesterday?
Madam Chair, Representative Krieger, the money is coming from reducing the amount that they would have included in facility grants had they not needed to put the money in marine law enforcement. So there's it's $398,000 for the state police package, and then there's another 150 some thousand for the additional position that they're putting in marine law enforcement. They're shifting money from facility grants to marine law enforcement. But there still is, there still remains a balance in, or an expenditure limitation for facility grants, and there still will be grants that will be provided to local parks and actually state parks as well, and the waterways for the boat docks and ramps. It's just not going to be as much as they have had in the past, or there will be fewer projects that they'll be able to do.
Are you ready to do LFO's recommended budget?
I am, but I can also give you the numbers that you on administration down here and the percentage if you want those.
Okay. Hot off the calculator.
Numbers here. For your administration and support, number for 89.91, it's 13.51%. For 91.93, it's 19.76%. For 93.95, it's 20.57%. For 95.97, it's 20.73%. For 97.99, it's 20.02%. For 99.01, 14.67%. And then 0103, it's 14.35%.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hayden.
Susie, what accounts for the fairly dramatic drop in administrative and capital expenditures and so on? They're at 99.01 from 20% to 15%.
I'm going to have to look at the line items. Paul, do you have an explanation for the drop on the
on the...
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden. For a few years there, we were trying to recapitalize on boats and equipment that had reached expiration, and I believe the biggest reason for that drop would be a reduction in capital outlay.
Thank you.
It's down to a pretty minimal replacement level right now.
Okay.
Trying to keep a fleet of 80 or 100 boats operational statewide.
Madam Chair.
Representative Nolan.
It also coincides with a $600,000 increase in the transfer to OSP, for which I presume they don't incur much administrative cost if they simply write a bigger check.
Okay. What I will do at this point is close the public hearing portion of the budget. If there is no other members of the public or anyone out there that wants to come forward at this time and testify, I will close the public hearing portion and enter the work session. Susie, could you please present the legislative fiscal office's recommended budget?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm going to start out by working from the spreadsheet that I just handed out to you. There are a few technical adjustments that I'm recommending that you make, and so I'll go through those as we go. I'll identify those as we go through the worksheets. The first page is a summary of the totals. Giving you the history of the actual through the LFO recommendation that's included in this spreadsheet. And the next two pages, page 2 and 3, is a summary of the total budget. I'm going to skip over those and go straight to the program and go through it by each program area and then come back to the summary page for the totals. The administration and education program, walking through that, we start out with the legislatively adopted budget from last biennium, and then we add to that any emergency board actions through April 2000, which is the cutoff date for preparing the governor's recommended budget. You may find that there will be adjustments for other emergency board actions that happened since that time by the LFO office, but there weren't any in this budget. The amount of money here is for a February 2000 e-board authorizing three permanent positions to phase in the mandatory voter education program that was authorized by the last session. And also its salary increases in the governor's budget. That gives you brings you to a base budget of $3.4 million for administration and education. And then we add adjustments or subtract adjustments in the budget. In the administrative biannualized e-board, where it biannualized the cost of salary increases and the three positions that were approved. In this part, LFO is making adjustment to reduce employer PERS contribution by 1.53%. That's $3,973. And then in the estimated cost of merit increases, the $35,000 is the projected merit increases for eligible employees during the next biennium. Then the total base budget. On the The next page are the essential packages. Package 010 is the personal service adjustments for mass transit tax that was due to increase in salaries. There is no projected budget savings from staff turnover for 2103 in this budget. 020 phases out one-time services and supplies expenditure that were associated with the mandatory voter education program beginning costs. And then the 030 are standard inflation costs, and there was an inflation exception of 4.5% granted for office rent and taxes. The Marine Board is off the Capitol Mall, and their lease expenses are slightly higher than the general services rate. 050 are fund shifts. This is reducing the budget by 350 because donations for the Adopt a River program will not exceed $10,000, so the budget is reflecting the 10,000 base budget. And now the current service level then is adjusted by the $3,973 to $3,678 for the PERS. I'm recommending approval of the reclassification for the three positions. This is in all three program areas because one-third of each position is budgeted in each of the program areas. So I'm not going to go over it every time, but by approving this, you are approving the higher classification, which is a technical adjustment on the Department of Administrative Services side for that will allow them to put the higher class in their computer system. They, as the agency testified, those positions are already being paid a work out of class amount of money, so that money is in their base budget and is already rolled up to take into account any increases in pay.
Madam Chair, can I ask a question?
Senator,
because I'm sure I'm misunderstanding this one. It says authorizes reclassification of director.
Madam Chair, yes, the director of the Oregon State Marine Board is Paul Duncan.
Is working out of class?
Is
that's hard to imagine. A director working out of class.
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, the Marine Board uses the state's classification system, and when they hired Mr. Don Hefner, they hired him in at a principal exec manager D, and through the course of time his duties and responsibilities have changed, and they did a review of that position at the Human Resources Department Division over in DAS reviewed the position and said that it's inappropriately classified and it should be a higher classification. So as all state employees are classified, so are the directors of our boards.
I just find that most interesting. I thought directors were given jobs to do and they did their jobs and we paid them for it. Just the concept of a director working out of classification is an anomaly to me. I understand what you're saying.
Okay.
I just don't quite get that one.
Can I follow up on the question? Okay. Is it a salary range or a classification we're talking about? Are they working underneath the salary range for the directorship, or are they working out of the classification for the directorship? Or is it both?
Madam Chair, Senator Ferrioli, it's both. It's both.
Okay.
Last, you don't ever go down.
Right. But there's laterals and so forth. Madam Chairman, it wouldn't be the first time somebody in this building had been accused of working without class. But it's not the same thing. I think I share Senator Duke's question about the salary range for directorships is classified in the personnel division in the executive branch. And I just wondered how you'd have somebody working out of their class underneath or over. I guess the salary range would be posted for the job. And as they're appointed, how would you have them outside that classification? It is an anomaly. Maybe we should ask somebody from personnel.
Is he doing something we didn't expect him to do?
Direct. Supposed to direct. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right.
Madam Chair, while we're on the subject.
Representative Nolan.
I am not uniquely troubled by this particular position, but I'm troubled by the more general practice that as I understand, working out of class, we are assigning employees to do duties that are outside the class that they're being paid for, which could be interpreted to be loose management on the part of the people who are making the assignments. Legislature has authorized a certain budget, a certain rate of pay to do the work, and someone's assigning those employees to do work that's beyond that class. And I question the practice of simply automatically approving those excesses. And it's not just this budget, but I think we've seen it in a few other budgets, and I no doubt we will see it in future budgets where, well, we've been assigning them duties beyond what you authorized us to do, so now approve us to keep doing that. And I'm troubled by that practice.
Representative Hansen.
Well, not to start a long argument, I applaud that practice because a lot of times the jobs evolve into the someone's assigned a task to do, but the jobs, the technology, the workload involved with that, with getting doing that function for us, changes. And as employees increase their skills, and these are things that evolve over usually a fairly long period of time between reclassifications. But if you limited the employee to simply doing what was, you know, very prescribed within their class, as the job evolved, key work wouldn't get done. And it's the manager's job to see to that the classifications truly reflect the work that's done. But it's a dynamic, changing model that.
It's not my job. It's my accounted for.
Representative Hayden.
Does this or any of the budgets that we're seeing involve managerial overtime as relates to the
suit?
Or aren't we facing some sort of compensation for managerial overtime?
There is a court case that is either, has it been decided?
It was.
But that was only for a specific period of time that no longer applies to us today, however.
Yeah.
Although I believe that, yeah, because the legislature passed a law that dealt with that issue for managerial overtime.
Right.
Yeah.
Close that loophole.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, these are two totally separate. That's a totally separate issue from reclassification of a position. And reclassifying a position isn't based on the amount of extra hours that a manager puts in or any other. It specifically has to do with the level of responsibility and type of work that you're doing.
Well, I can see if they're different, but I can see similarities.
Madam Chair, could I just ask what page we are working from at this point? I've kind of lost where I was.
Madam Chair, we're on page 7, Representative Bowman.
Thank you. Would you mind repeating the page as you go through? Because I think we tend to...
We get lost.
Everybody's...
You know,
they're all faking.
To be honest, it's after lunch. Your eyes are glazing over because, you know, lunch is settling. And we're talking budget numbers.
Budget, yeah.
And
I threw you off.
We have a tendency to wander off.
Which is that side of the...
Madam Chair, when I start snoring, you know, just throw something at me. It would be fine.
Oh, you think it's tough now? You wait until May.
I know.
Degrees.
What do you mean, May? Won't we be home by then?
Yeah, right.
We're hoping. Madam Chair, if I may ask, Susie, is it in our more detailed budget synopsis here of what the director's classification is going to cost in terms of hard dollars?
Madam Chair, Representative Croft, no, there is not a dollar figure attached to that.
But there should be, shouldn't there?
Well, they're already being paid. I can give you the salary. I can get that for you tomorrow.
Oh, all right. So let me back up because maybe I've misunderstood, and please set me straight.
Okay.
It's a big job. Somebody's got to do it. We're already paying the director the amount of money. We're just reclassifying as a technical thing.
Madam Chair, Representative Croft, that's correct.
So he's not going to get paid anymore because we're already paying him for that. Okay, all
right. That's right. We're just making it right.
Senator
okay.
So we pay directors out of Class 2?
Apparently so,
Senator. Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, when it's the right thing to do, for the work that they're doing, we pay them the work out of class.
So running the agency and managing the personnel isn't enough of a job description. I better quit while I'm behind you. Out of class, okay.
But
I gotcha.
Applies to us.
Susie, is it a correct statement here that in terms of the budget that LFO is presenting us, we won't be paying the director anymore, we'll simply be reclassifying the position?
That's correct.
Representative Bowman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I did have another question, and I'm totally away from the director's classification. But I was intrigued by the 28% inflation in the AG cost. How does an agency plan for such a significant increase based on, I understand that DAS developed a price list to say how much the agencies would have to pay for the AG service, but that seems like a significant hit on an agency and one biennium without any warning.
Madam Chair, Representative Bowman, the Attorney General didn't charge 28% in the current biennium. They're going to charge 28% more in the next biennium. So they're basing their budget increase on their historical level of expenditures with the Attorney General and increasing that by 28%. Now, it's also my understanding that another committee is dealing with the Attorney General costs and that there's likely to be a decrease in those costs, and that'll be a across-the-board decrease in everybody's budget in one piece of legislation rather than trying to deal with it in every single budget. But that's generally how they would calculate that. They're not hit with it unless they have an unusual amount of lawsuits and need a higher level of Attorney General type services, then they would have to come back to the emergency board and ask for an increase in limitation to pay for those costs.
Let me just interject one note. When this issue was discussed with the co-chairs and the subcommittee chairs, the co-chairs urged us to not get overheated over the amount that the Attorney General charges per hour, because as Susie said, that is being looked at by another committee. But what they did direct us to look at was the number of hours that the agency used with the Attorney General, and if that appeared to be out of line, to address that issue. But when that rate with the Attorney General is negotiated, it'll be factored back into all the budgets.
And Madam Chair, how would we know that the number of hours, are there some consistency to that? I mean, how many hours are they buying now, and how much more are they going to get with their 28% increase?
Madam Chair, Representative Bowman, I think I'd let Paul answer that question. I don't have the detail behind the numbers, but it is it's based on a historical usage of the agency's Attorney General.
Madam Chair, and following with Representative Bowman's question, what is the per hour rate currently that we're paying the AG's office, and what is the per hour rate that they are proposing? Could we have some enlightenment on that?
It's 90.
Sure.
Would you like to take a guess?
Guesses better than ours?
Yeah. Madam Chair.
Well, now, Representative Hansen has been patiently waiting in line, so.
Well, I'm on the Public Safety Ways and Means that this very week is examining the Attorney General's budget.
Oh, cool.
So the current rate's $90 an hour. The proposed rate at this point is $106.
Just put it cheap.
That's really not the cost for their attorneys, but there are also some unbudgeted costs that get allocated across state government through the Attorney General rate. So there's sort of a built-in subsidy for some things like ballot title work and some other things that we're examining. The other issue is there's a cash flow problem within the Attorney General's office that some state agencies don't promptly pay, not eventually get the money, but some of the cases are fairly complicated, so the agencies will take several months to examine Attorney General billing costs, which, and part of that adjustment to $106 an hour is to create some cash flow problems within the agency that there may be some other ways to deal with. Anyway, between all of those, there will probably be a pretty dramatic reduction of the increase by the time we're done. So it's a fluid situation, and it won't be 28% by the time it's done.
Thank you.
Senator, well, let's give Linda a chance here.
Let's not give
Thank
Linda.
You, Madam Chair.
Linda doesn't need a chance.
Just throw something at him, Linda. It's okay. We all want to also.
She's going to be guessing anyway, Madam Chair.
Yeah, chill that.
She's got the line item out in front of her.
Cindy Gilbert, Department of Administrative Services, Budget and Management. The original increase in the Attorney General rate was 28%. As we went through the governor's recommended process looking at all agency budgets, we took it back to an 18% increase. So there has been one adjustment made already, and we don't make up their rate, but in fact we were able to, through the governor's recommended process, bring it down. So it still is an 18% increase, and that's what's in the governor's recommended budget. And it was 28 originally, and your numbers sound right. I would have guessed around that number, that per hour rate.
Of course you would have.
And with respect to how much time is the agency actually using, there is detail back in the back of the budget on page 14, for instance, where you can see that at the top of the page it says $97.99 actual dollars, and the approved budget for $99.01 was about $7,000. The biennial estimate for $99.01 is $6,000. They requested $9,441, and the governor's recommended is down to $8,000. So it may be, we could look at the estimate and say, only $6,000 before, and it may be that it's possible to think that there would be fewer hours needed.
Are you looking at a separate program? Because
I am looking at a separate program, but as an example, yes.
Okay.
Senator Ferriero.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I have a serious question for the colleagues, but it does not need an answer. It's something for them to think about.
A rhetorical question?
Ma'am, no, it's not rhetorical at all, but it's just something that's bothered me about this process since the day I came into this process, and that is this. All of our agencies that provide services have personnel who are salaried. None works on a commission. All of them are bound by the wage and hour requirements and rules, and each works in a classification that we understand as the public service classification of employees. Who of those employees would be laid off or lose their jobs if agencies were prohibited from billing each other for services that they render?
That was it?
I think the answer would be big goose egg.
That's true. Yes. That's after 4 years of wandering around here. That's what I've come to. The conclusion I've come to is if agencies just stopped billing each other and punched the same clock and worked at the same desk and emptied the same baskets, we could stop all this accounting and cross accountability and running up costs and running up budgets for paying people salaries but asking them or authorizing them to charge agencies for the work that they do. We're appropriating the dollars to the agencies and charging each other service costs. And essentially, it's the same employees doing the same work. And for some reason, we're balancing our budgets with an artificial accounting process that includes essentially fee-for-services arrangements between state agencies. And we just stopped them from charging each other agencies. I don't know who would lose their jobs or what processes. We did this in the name of accountability.
A lot of accountants would lose their jobs, that's for sure.
You have to go home.
Second that motion, Representative Bowman. It's not a rhetorical question, but I don't have an answer. So I just gave that to the colleagues to think about. Every year we sit here and watch the cost of continuing our current level of services increase, and part of the roll-up costs are the additional estimates for services provided by one state agency for another state agency. And so I just wonder at what point in time we wise up a sucker or give a chump an even break. We're the chumps. So thank you, Madam Chairman.
That's a very interesting thought.
It is. I guess, Madam Chairman's Department of Administrative Services is trying to hold the line at 17%. I'm going, geez. But if we didn't give them any increase, in fact, roll back the increases, nobody in that office would lose a paycheck.
That's a good point. Susie, do you want to continue with the presentation here?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Well, some of the Ferrioli's a hard act to follow.
Huh? Yeah. I'll just bring us right back to policy package 104, which is implementing the mandatory education program. This is on page 7.
Thank you.
This is a request to fill temporary, to provide temporary support and services and supplies for a potential increase in workload as the mandatory voter education program is fully implemented. There will be more people coming and requesting licensing and education services. So the total administration and education budget then is recommended at $3,869,423, with that is the governor's recommended budget with a technical adjustment. Then on page 8, which probably has a hole through it on your copy, the law enforcement program, beginning with the legislatively adopted budget of $9.4 million that was adjusted by the February 2000 Emergency Board for a decrease in federal funds. There was an increase in other funds there, and also salary increases for staff. The total legislatively approved budget then with emergency board actions is $9.8 million. Administrative biannualized costs is the cost for salary increases for a full biennium, and a reduction of $946 for the employer PERS contribution. Estimated cost of merit increases is $7,468 for eligible employees, bringing their total base budget to $9,837,492. We're now on page 9, looking at essential packages. Again, there's a $114 increase for mass transit tax. There is an increase in the inflation price adjustments, and those costs are in both the other and federal funds, and you can correct that 28%, make that 18% in AG costs. By the way, members of the committee, the total Attorney General line item for a Marine Board is $12,000 for $12,000. That's about 115 hours of AG services. And there is a fund shift to reflect the reduction in federal funds under the Clean Vessel Act and Sport Fish Restoration. So the budget's been reduced about $500,000. The current service level then is $9,615,000. Turning to the next page, which would be page 10, with a hole through it.
Excuse me, thank you. Susie, enlighten me. If the documentation that you're sharing with us here about the AG's cost is based and predicated upon the 28% that is written here, and yet Linda is telling us it's already been reduced to 18, then how can your numbers be accurate?
Madam Chair, Representative Croft, my numbers are directly from the governor's recommended budget. I wasn't aware that the percentage was 20. It was 18%. I put in the amount of money.
Okay. So in reality, then, Madam Chair, these numbers are really reflecting an 18% AG's cost, not 28%.
That's
what you're saying. Okay.
That's
thank
correct.
You.
On to page 10. Again, the reclass package. Package 105 is the maintaining the law enforcement support. That's the package the agency talked about increasing the budget by one person to handle their additional administrative work relating to increase in law enforcement work. There is an offsetting reduction in the facility program to pay for this position and the services and supplies here. Then package 107 is the state police package that we talked about, $398,000, for a total budget then of $10,172,872. Moving on to page 11, to the facility grant program, beginning with the legislatively adopted budget of $7.5 million. Adding emergency board actions. These are the February 2000 one-time increase for facility grants due to an increase in their ending balance. Later that will be backed out also for salary increases during the biennium. The base budget then is $8.6 million. The administrative biennialized costs is the salary increases with a technical adjustment for the employer PERS contribution, $1,897 total. Estimated cost of merit increases is $26,476 for eligible employees. Base budget then is $8,775,379. Now we are on page 12.
May I ask you, Susie, how many merit increases, how many employees would be estimated to be eligible for that?
Madam Chair, Representative Kropp, I don't know the exact number. This is generated by the Department of Administrative Services Personnel Information System. Perhaps the agency has an answer to that question.
Are already reclassified.
Right, so
about 36, 33.
Okay, I move on then. Okay, that's fine.
It's generated.
Right. It's never wrong.
Okay.
Perhaps you could explain that.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Linda Gilbert again. The number is generated based on the number of positions that are filled at the time of what we call a freeze, which is in April of 2000. So there is a snapshot taken of every state agency in April of 2000 and it counts all the positions that are filled and says, okay, if you're filled and you are at this salary range and you are at this step within the salary range, then we estimate that merit increases for the following biennium will be.
Okay.
And it just cranks out the number.
So do we know how many that is?
The number of positions that were filled on in April. Do you have any vacancies?
I think there's probably 8 eligible.
And you're at step 8. And for the whole agency, then
that new range.
To
here? Yeah.
I'm at facilities. I'm tied to just facilities here.
So, okay.
Okay. Thank you very much. That gets me to where I satisfies my question, ma'am. Thank you.
Please continue.
Madam Chairman, I guess I have to ask another question.
It's specific to the budget.
A real question?
Actually, it's a real question.
Absolutely. Go ahead.
It looks like we're reclassifying the director, or at least we're recognizing the fact that the director's worked out of class. So we're going to take him from an PEME, SR33 to an SR35. What does that mean in real terms? How much money difference is that? We're also taking the deputy director from a 26 to a 33. I guess I'd like to know what that cost is and why those costs are not shown in the classification as real costs. There's nothing listed in the budget document that shows the real cost increases, and I want to know what that number is.
Madam Chair, Senator Ferrioli, on page 89 of the agency's binder, there is program option package 101, 3 classes, and it was as it says on this page, it was recommended without funding. What this shows is the new salary range.
I don't know.
It's behind tab.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes.
Program unit one.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it will show a position, and it will show the variance between what the position is currently paid and what the position would be paid at the higher level. So you won't see the entire salary on this particular page. You will see the variance amount only.
All right, so that was program tab.
Program
one.
One,
page
89.
We're slow.
No,
this is enough, right? Yeah. No. Thorough.
So the difference is $36,000.
For this particular program unit, then within
that's for three positions.
On average.
Three positions for 2 years.
Variance. For 2.3. There's another one in program unit 2. There's a third of the IS position. And in program unit 3, there's another third of the IS position. That one got spread over. The total for the biennium is about $75,000, and it's about 0.3% of the agency budget.
So the, in real terms, these two or three position reclassifications cost $75,000 for the biennium.
Actually, four positions.
This is where's the, what programs tabs are the other positions in?
So this is
in program unit two. On page 104.
This is what I was making because that's the one right underneath it.
There's the one third of the IS position.
Just explain it to you.
And behind program unit 3 on page 126, there's the final third of the IS position, and then there is principal executive manager D.
Okay. And Madam Chair, just a follow-up question, I'll cut to the chase on my line of questioning, which is, and I don't mean to hop ahead here, but does the legislative fiscal officer propose any program option packages to be funded? In other words, this recommendation was made without funding
from the agency.
Is legislative fiscal proposing funding for this increase?
Madam Chair, Senator Farioli, I'm recommending the governor's recommended budget, which is without funding.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Bowman. Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you answer a question for me? I noticed that is the SR like 33? Is that the position on the scale?
Madam Chair, Representative Bowman, SR stands for salary range. And it is a range within which there would be 7 or 8 different steps.
And would you go from SR, I mean, in a normal promotional thing, do you go from SR 26 to SR 27, or do you go from SR 26 to
33?
I mean, how does the step process work is what I'm trying to.
The step process works during the biennium when you are within a particular salary range. If you're, you know, salary range, whatever it is, then you move from step 1 to 2 to 3. With the reclassification, you would go to a different salary range, and it's usually a jump of 2, a 31 to a 33, or a 33 to 35, or something like that.
Right. This one was significant, though. It went from SR 26 to a SR 33.
Either way. Where are we?
So we've skipped 5.
That's
steps.
The analysis.
Co-management analysis page, to deputy director.
Page
10.
Page 10.
10 of 13 on this doohickey.
Under the 102 policy package.
I mean, I've seen the IS positions jump because it's just really difficult to keep people in the computer field. I'm just wondering what the rationale was behind the SR 26 to the SR 33.
Oh, the deputy director position, I can't speak directly to that, but it was reviewed by DAS, Human Resources Services Division, which is one of the things that they do, to see if the reclassification was appropriate. In other words, is this position actually performing duties that are beyond the scope of the present classification? And they determined that, in fact, that was the case, and so they approved this for, or they recommended, they didn't approve, they can't approve, but they recommended that this was an appropriate reclassification to write many steps, I mean, many ranges.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Please proceed.
And I've moved on to page 11, which is the facility grant program. And we passed that. We're now on page 12. This reflects the essential packages, the vacancy factor, the cost of phase in and phase out. Here in 020, you'll see where we've phased out the one-time services and supplies associated with starting up the this is not the startup of the mandatory border education. It's the one-time increase for facility grants that we authorized in the emergency board. Then 030 is the inflation price list adjustments. 050 is the reduces the budget for this is reflecting the decrease in revenues that was talked about earlier. And the current service level then is $7.6
million. Susie, refresh my memory on the e-board, giving the agency the ability to add $1 million to the facility grant program. Is that included in the 9901 budget?
Madam Chair, it's not included in the legislatively adopted budget. It was, it's included, it came after the information came too late for it to be included by the legislature, and so they came to the emergency board in February and had identified that they had two increases. They had an increase in federal funding, and they had an increase in the in their ending balance, which allowed them to increase the number of facility grants. And so the emergency board authorized that increase.
So the facility grant number that's on this spreadsheet that you did under 9901 estimated, does it include that $1 million increase?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does, because the agency made the estimate up to April of 2000, and that would include the emergency board action.
So that's another contributing factor to the small beginning balance in the 2001-2003?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
That's correct.
Representative Crow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to have perhaps an independent analysis of either, if it's appropriate, from legislative fiscal or from DAS in regards to the cost of implementing House Bill 2977. And the reason I'm asking for that is I'd like to compare the costs, because we seem to be a lot of costs in this budget, in terms of three positions, startup costs that were in it that are phased out now. Seems to be a lot of costs in this budget associated with implementing that House bill, and I'd like to compare that with what the fiscal impact analysis was with the bill when we passed it last session. I would like to see what it actually cost to implement that program as opposed to what we were told it was going to cost. Not that there's anything different there, but I would, just for comparisons, I'd like to see that. Am I assuming this was Representative Mannix's bill?
The one that we sent back.
The one that we sent back. This is it.
It wasn't his bill. He put it in.
It was in his committee that.
Yeah. Oh, it was. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
That's the one that we trashed the first time around.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's the reincarnation of the DMV.
Okay. I have to be quite honest with you. I didn't recall that it was going to require three 3 FTE to implement that program. And what I want to know as a legislator is if we think it's going to work one way when we pass the legislation and it comes back that all of a sudden there are increased costs, perhaps our methodology as legislators should take note of that as we're passing legislation. It would be helpful. So whomever is responsible, could you, I don't know who would.
Madam Chair, we can bring that to you tomorrow.
I would appreciate that. It would be great. Thank you.
And I would, Mr. Don Hempner, I wonder if you would come forward and talk to the committee about why the decision was made to spend the $1 million in facility grants in the interim rather than putting it on the ending balance for this budget cycle.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Paul Don Hempner, Director of the Marine Board. When we got to the end of last biennium, we had accumulated some savings as a result of projects that weren't done, that came in under budget, some reversions from some of our contracts, and some over-realized fee revenue, some registration revenue that was over-realized. Looking at that and the fact that facilities had declined, we looked at it as an opportunity to put some of those dollars to use on the ground in construction projects where they could benefit people who paid the fee and to get it out there on the ground where it does some good as opposed to bringing it forward as a large ending balance. We try not to keep more in any balance than we need as a prudent cash reserve, and we don't want to be accused of hoarding the voters' money.
Chair.
Well, let me just have one follow-up here. So the decision was made to go into the next biennium with a lower than normal ending balance in order to fund facility grants. Is that a fair statement?
Madam Chair, no, I wouldn't characterize it that way because our ending balance that we will go forward with will be pretty much normal, what we would normally carry forward. So we weren't looking out to 2001-2003, anticipating a decline in fee revenue and federal fund shortfall that's come upon us. And even had we, I'm not sure that saving it would have gotten us out of this predicament. I mean, with facilities, either we do them now or we save it and do them later, but we think it makes better sense to funds are available to get those projects out there.
Is it a normal occurrence for the agency to go to the E-Board to request spending of excess revenues?
Madam Chair, yes. It's a pretty regular thing, and part of it is the difficulty in forecasting revenue 3 years out. Sometimes as you're preparing these budgets, right now we're looking at 2003.
So the agency has a history of pretty prudent budgeting so that when you get to the interim, it makes sense to do that. So is it fair to assume that we'll probably be in the same situation in the biennium or the interim coming up, that there is a possibility that there'll be excess funds available?
Madam Chair, given that we've seen a slowdown in registration, and we're anticipating less fuel tax transfer and less federal funds, we may not have that opportunity as we've had in the past. But we have traditionally taken a conservative approach to expenditure, and that has allowed us to bring forward ending balances, which in previous budgets have helped us through times where we've seen dips in federal funds. For other things, we've been able to come back to the emergency board and using other funds make up those shortfalls. So whether we'll be able to do it again next time, I don't know. I promise that.
Okay, thank you. Representative Krupp, sorry to cut you off back there.
No, it's perfectly all right, Madam Chair. I have long felt that it it's time for us in state government to look at a policy change in how we look at budgets from the respect of carrying over or unused funds at the end of a biennium. The common conception, and maybe it's a misconception on our part as legislators, but at the end of a biennium, if there are excess funds, it's either use it or lose it, is the oftentimes thought of issue that we deal with as legislators. In other words, if there's unused funds, then they've got to spend it, because if they don't spend it all, then the legislative body will cut back their budgets next session. I applaud any agency that, through efficiency and judicious use of the taxpayers' resources, comes up with a surplus at the end. And I think we ought to reward them in some fashion for that as a matter of policy. I'm not sure how we do that. I've talked to legislative counsel about allowing carry forwards without penalty of unused funds and paying bonuses to departments who are able to, and agencies who are able to achieve that out of at least a percentage of those unused funds. I think there are probably some landmines in that idea, because what if you come to a budget like we have today, where we have a very difficult budgeting scenario based on a number of issues. But I think we ought to, as a matter of policy, we ought to find a way to reward agencies when they do a really good job in being very, very efficient, rather than always just taking money away from them.
Also, Representative Krupp, it's my understanding that there are ending balances are there for a number of reasons, and there are cash flow considerations and keeping the agency
sure.
solvent while other things are going on that are a large part of the decision. But anyway, please, brief any. Oh, shoot, we're already over our time.
We're over.
I can wrap this up real quick, because this is the last program. There are two policy packages here. Both are reductions associated with increases in the law enforcement program. That's the $398,000 for the state police and $158,000 for the position in law enforcement. The total of SILI grant program then is $7,113,810 with the technical adjustments by LFO. And Madam Chair, our aptit staff in LFO ran in the fiscal impact statement on the mandatory education program. There were four positions that were estimated at the time
Representative Krupp, they're discussing their...
Oh.
He has it there in front of him.
I apologize. We were looking over the information she provided. Thank you.
If that satisfies your need, do you want us to
no,
do
not,
a comparison?
No, not quite. Okay. I would like to see the other associated costs, because this, in the comments section of this, it talks about providing for administrative rules, but it doesn't identify the cost to adopt the rules or administer the program for the first 6 months and thereafter. And I guess I need to have an understanding of how this piece of legislation can require four FTE, four full-time equivalents. And in this case, I think we're only funding three.
That's correct.
Correct? Okay. So I guess I need to understand more about that.
So would it be the associated costs that you'd be interested in rather than the position?
More than anything else. And I'd also like to know if we recommended four when we passed the bill, but it only takes three to implement it, or does it take three to implement it? Do we really need four? And if we really need four and we're only funding three, how are we getting by and managing the program successfully? Those are all questions mulling around in my mind, and I apologize for convoluting the issue.
Okay, we'll bring that back.
Could you? Thank you.
Where does the time go?
We are out of time, and it's the chair's intention to pass the Marine Board budget out of the committee tomorrow, so your attendance and punctuality would be greatly appreciated. And with that, I will adjourn this meeting.